Hey there, and welcome to Money for Change, the podcast where we dive into the sustainability transitions that are reshaping our world. If you're curious about where the planet and its inhabitants are headed, you're in the right place. In each episode, we'll chat with experts from Triodosbank whose work relates to these changes, tackling topics like the energy transition, circular economy, and what sustainable finance really means. Our goal? To bring you the latest insights on what it takes to create a more balanced and just world. But we don't just want you to listen. We want you to be part of the conversation. Head over to our website via the link in the show notes to share your thoughts, ask questions, or leave us a voice message. Welcome to Money for Change. Let's get started. Welcome, everyone, to the Money for Change podcast. It's a podcast where we explore the role of financing in shaping a sustainable future. Today's question is both timely and complex. Does impact measurement help banks drive real change, or does it hold them back? We're going to first explain to you guys what impact measurement is, why it should be measured, but also how it influences financing decisions, and of course, most importantly, real-world outcomes. So we've got our usual guest, Hans Steegman. You are Director of Impact and Economics, and Sven Renon, Impact Manager at Triodosbank. And I think before we dive into the big topic, Impact Manager, what does that mean? What are you, Sven?
What I am? That's a very deep question, Emma. I'm first of all a human being.
That's good to know.
Second of all, I'm also an Impact Manager at Triodos. So what does an Impact Manager do? Well, it's really ensuring that the vision that we have in impact, that we also really translate that to action. So that's setting targets, making a strategy, and monitoring that we actually achieve that.
Awesome.
That's it in a nutshell.
And may I also add why I'm today, this week, Director of Impact and Economics? Because at Triodosbank, we have grouped impact management with economic and sustainability research and what we call advocacy, because we believe, and that's exactly what Sven said, that having an outside perspective, understanding what sustainability is, bringing it to the business with impact and bringing it to the outside world with advocacy is the way we want to have impact as an organization.
And influence those real world outcomes.
Yes.
Awesome. So that's clear to me. And then let's dive into this question. And I think it'd be really nice, Hans, if you could give me an explanation or a narrative how impact investing has evolved over the years, and then after we can go into the technical aspects.
Yes, Triodos exists now for 44, next year 45 years. And since the beginning, we've always done things only for sustainability, directed at real-world outcomes, as you said, as a definition of impact. But in the beginning, it was, I would say, completely different. There was not impact investing language or lingo. It was about being ethical in terms of what you don't do.
Mm-hmm.
So on the social side, on human rights, on sex work, pornography, weapons, that kind of topics.
Yep.
Later on fossil fuels, because we also first invested in fossil fuels. So it was really ethical.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have difference on bank finance, but let's turn a little bit to the investment side. I also worked at Triodos Investment Management for a while because it's easier to explain to listeners what happened on the listed side. So in the funds where we invested in listed companies. So however, it can be traded on the stock exchange.
Yep.
We started with it in the 1990s. And then there were no data. So from our ethical criteria, we have just to look for the information. There was no information. So what we also did is call to other ethical banks in Italy, in Spain, and wherever to ask them, do you know something about this company where we want to invest in? From that on, in the early 2000s, we had impact data, because what you do then, if you have this data, you're going to put it in an Excel sheet. And then we got environmental, social, and governance indicators. That's the start, I would say, of the ESG industry as we know it. And it was still exclusion. And that whole industry has been the source of two things. On the one hand, what we call now the ESG integration part. So looking for sustainability risk integrated in your investment process and try to exclude those risks. That's one part.
Okay.
And on the other hand, we had the best in class approach. So then you have a sector and you say, okay, the automobile industry, this is the best in class, the most sustainable automobile company or bank or whatever, fossil fuel company. Then we were there, so the data industry grew bigger. Next step was going to impact. So not looking at the negative effect or the least bad company, but looking what is he exactly doing, that company? What is he producing? What is the service he provides? And does it help to contribute to a better world, so real world outcomes? And I think that's where we are now, in different ideas, more forward looking, more understanding what the impact is of the products and services that are made from a company.
That is a very thorough explanation. I think just to be clear, there's also nowadays a lot of regulation on sustainability information. That is not what we're talking about today. There will be most likely another episode at some point. Let's go to Sven, because if you hear this, what is impact measurement now? So how would you define impact?
Yeah, so to talk about impact measurement, indeed, it's good to first define what impact is. So what are we talking about? I think Hans already kind of touched upon it. It's about our real world effect. So that makes it different from an output, which is something you directly produce. And an impact is about what kind of like end result that has. So to give an example of a cookie factory, the output of a cookie factory is cookies. The impact of a cookie factory is happy people that eat cookies.
Nice.
But also
or obesity.
Or negative health impacts from these cookies. And of course, all the energy that goes into these cookies also maybe is created with fossil fuels and creates climate change. So that's a bit of an example. What's the difference between output and impact? And there, in that example, you also saw that it can be positive, it can be negative, it can be direct and can be indirect.
Mm-hmm. And what if your cookie factory starts making oatmeal cookies? They're healthier, so less obesity. Would that be considered a positive impact?
It depends.
Okay.
That's always an answer you can expect, of course. So if you look at it just very purely without comparing it to something else, in some respects, yes. So if you talk about the climate change, for example, producing a cookie simply costs energy and probably that's done partially with fossil fuels. So that will create emissions and climate change. So that's the absolute impact. If you compare an oatmeal cookie with a normal cookie, maybe it takes less energy to produce that cookie. So you could argue, hey, it has less negative impact. And some people call that positive impact.
And how would you call it?
I would call that marginal impact.
Okay.
But you could say it's the difference you make, and both are important. But I think it's always really important to start with this absolute impact. So without comparing to anything else, what kind of impact do you have?
Yeah. So let's bring it back to sustainability transitions, because this is not a podcast about cookies. Although
I'm getting hungry now, though.
Okay, so if you take two examples, renewable energy, solar panels or wind turbines, mm-hmm. and fossil fuels. So the solar panels still need to be produced. So you still need to use resources. Sometimes, like we heard last week, scarce materials that aren't always available. There's quite a few social aspects, negative social impacts in those supply chains. That's still being caused. So that's the absolute impact, and that's most of the time, I'm going to say negative on the environment because our economies are kind of based on that. But what you're saying now is that fossil fuel, producing the fossil fuels, is even worse. And so that difference is what could be considered positive impact then.
Yeah. It's essential that people understand this concept, because what we know is all economic activity has absolute negative impact on the environment. So the more economic activity, the more absolute negative impact. And of course, you can mitigate those negative impacts. You can call it positive.
Yeah.
So you can say we mitigate. So let's for one time go back to the cookie factory. If we have oatmeal cookies, we can say that's marginally better. And if we produce it with less carbon emission, it's also marginally better. And you can do a lot of stuff, but you still can ask the questions, how many cookies do we need?
Mm-hmm.
And from that perspective, you could say that the most positive impact you get, or mitigating the negative impact, is not producing cookies. That's a different.
Yeah.
But this is essential to understand. Yeah. If talk about positive and negative impact, most of the time in the financial sector, if you talk about positive impact, we talk about mitigating part of the negative impact by doing things a little bit more sustainable.
Okay, so less bad. I'm going to just simplify it.
Exactly.
Less bad impact. Okay. And I have a question because something popped into my head. You know, we're starting towards measuring this, so we can measure CO2 equivalent, so carbon emissions equivalent. We can measure now also the impact on biodiversity through different drivers. What about the things that we can't measure? Is there a risk there that we overlook them?
Absolutely. And I think that's really important. So I think that really, for me, a key takeaway after working quite some years in impact measurement, and before Triodos, I worked on impact measurement most of the time. I can really say that before measuring anything, it's really important to think about it, to have the logic right, to have a clear vision, have clear values, think about what's the intention that I have with this. And you don't always need perfect measurement to do the right thing. I think Hans already explained that with the examples of Triodos in the past. Then they just did it. And it didn't need perfect measurement to do that.
No, I think it's critical, and it's also what you say, that you have to understand your objective, and it's more about impact management. So what do we want to achieve by looking at impact, and what impact do we want to have?
Mm-hmm.
And then decide what kind of data you need.
Yeah.
And for what purpose then?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's very critical to understand that you... Otherwise, and I think that's what part of the industry is now, is saying, yeah, we don't have the data because, and therefore we cannot take a decision.
Mm.
Yeah.
Which is kind of stupid reasoning.
Exactly.
Because you first have to ask, where do I need the data for? What kind of decisions can I take myself?
Yeah.
Without having the exact data.
And I think even now there's so much data available that you can also think about, do I really need this data? It's become a whole industry in itself. So I think it's good to think about, am I doing this impact measurement as an end in itself, or really are we using it to actually make impact?
Yeah.
So that's also important there.
Time to process a lot of this. So if I understand correctly, we have moved from a values-based ethical investing begin point towards exclusion, towards now having a vision and working towards it. In some aspects, the data is really leading in, you know, being followed. I think a concept is carbon tunnel vision that I've heard before. You probably, Sven, have a lot of experience with that. Can you explain just quickly to the listener what an example is of having data and really making the wrong choices almost?
Yeah, maybe an example on that carbon tunnel vision and the danger of really focusing on climate, where there's a lot of data available, a lot of insight available. I think one interesting example there is, for example, biomass. If you would just look at climate and the data on that is available, then biomass seems a great idea because it produces much less CO2 than, for example, a coal plant. But if you look broader than just CO2 emissions, it's not such a good idea. Because first of all, the stuff that you put in a biomass plant is often trees, organic material, and it can be the case that forests were cut down for that. On top of that, there's a lot of air pollution from biomass. It also has quite a big negative health impact. So if you look broader than just climate, compared with that, it's not a good idea.
Yeah, I also want to say, Emma, you summarized a little bit the history of Triodos Bank and say that we now use the data, I still think we do the same as 44 years ago.
Mm.
Okay.
Now we have only data that should help us to take better decisions.
Yeah.
But essentially, we do the same as we did 44 years ago. Being ethical on what you think is right and wrong, but try to have, with the data, a better understanding, make it ourselves also sometimes easier to make those decisions.
Should we then even measure, Hans, if you say the impact is the same?
Yes, it helps to. I think a great example is what we did last year in our annual report with a deep dive on the energy transition.
Right.
It's trying to understand what impact you have in an energy transition.
Yeah.
And what choices you have to do it even better. Also what we did, Judith and Sven, on biodiversity, to better understand the hotspots of biodiversity loss we have in our portfolio. That helps us to say, oh, shoot, we also have very negative impacts here and there. Let's do it differently. Let's take different decisions.
Yeah.
I think that's very, very important that we have data to guide us in such a process.
Yeah.
And it really depends per product or per financial instrument what kind of data you need. And also not being dogmatic about it. And that's really a challenge. If you want to reduce your carbon emissions, is that's your goal. And you should have all that carbon tunnel. So you have the data you do there. But yes, sometimes you also want to do social housing or elderly care, where you have buildings that have carbon emissions. So how do you handle that?
Yep.
It's never just positive impact or negative impact.
No, and I can imagine that if you are trying to measure everything, you at some point, you know, get stuck. And especially also for smaller and medium enterprises, it might be hard. I think that's clear. I think let's try to shift a bit more towards understanding how we actually use this impact data. So while we can measure everything, it's not going to always get us to better decisions. How do you balance that? You know, how can banks make sure they're making meaningful decisions while measuring and taking action?
I think that really starts with asking, why are you measuring impact? It starts with thinking about, do I want to use this to understand broadly where we are? So that's the example of the hotspots for biodiversity, where it's quite a new topic for us. And we also want to understand, hey, is there any negative blind spots maybe in our portfolio? Then you can do quite a broad measurement and you don't really need a lot of detail. So you don't need to be very precise. If you, on the other hand, really want to understand, for example, how you're making a difference on something specific. So, for example, renewable energy, to really understand, okay, where in the value chain do we have the biggest difference, or what should we do there to really have even more positive impact? Then you have to get more into details and also think about, okay, what do I compare this with? So create a good reference scenario, what it means for Triodos Bank. So I think these are two important things there to take into account.
That's really on the management part. So how can you make better decisions on steering on impact, which also differs per financial instrument. Sometimes you can get more, so for private debt or equity, you have a different relationship to your investees, so you can get more data, you can better steer. It's different with bank finance, with SMEs, then data is quite often a problem. It's always also different with listed. So that depends. Another element is on reporting on it for sake of transparency, that you want to show to your clients, to a broader audience, what you do, what the impact is. And then you can also use different kind of data sometimes. So what we call proxy data, so not the data of the investee itself, but of the average of a sector or something less granular, so less specific. And that helps to show on a higher level, so what you more or less are doing as an institution or for your portfolio. I think that should also be kept in mind, that it can be really different kinds of data.
I think that's clear. There's a lot of different types of data and a lot of different ways of looking at it.
And maybe to add to that,
Go
add to the complexity. Emma likes it.
No, I actually want to argue for some simplicity here.
So you
maybe like that. Because nowadays it's very trendy to say, you know, you should really focus on impact instead of output.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes it's already really important to be clear about your output. There are very little banks that are transparent on what they finance. And that's where it starts with, to show like, what are you financing, in which sectors, which companies? And I think that's really the start of this kind of transparency.
So we're not even at that point yet.
And I think
we are
as Triodos. Thank you, Hans, for clarifying that. We are, but the financial sector.
Yeah.
And that's also one element we did not discuss. We have positive and negative impact. And what you see quite a lot in the financial sector is that some financial institutions are very proud of their positive impact and forget the negative part.
Yeah.
And I think if you want to be transparent about your impact, you should show everything and not reduce it to some positive parts of your portfolio, making a big marketing stunt out of it. I think that's not the purpose of, at least for us, impact measurement is not a marketing or PR stance.
Very key. I think that's very important. And as you said, you know, almost all economic activity causes negative impact. So it's crazy that you wouldn't show something and be transparent about that. I want to go back to the whole decision making, because it's clear now impact measurement can do a lot of great things for us, can give us the hotspots in our different portfolios, can really allow us to be transparent in what we're doing towards this more sustainable transition and sustainable society. But then my question is, can impact measurement also inform us where we want to go? So how do we know we're driving that systemic change? How do we know what kind of systemic change do we want? Can impact measurement help us with that? Or is that more a values-based approach that you should be taking?
I think it's impact measurement is part of it. And that's what we try to do also with our white paper on transformative potential that we published, and also the approach we try to take. So it's like the story I told in the beginning. For me, this is the next step. Understanding what your investments are doing to accelerate the transition. So try to have a more forward-looking idea of where to go, which is quite challenging because you don't have any forward-looking data. Mm. Data are always based on what's happening.
Well, we have Paris Agreement, for example, where we should be in carbon emissions.
And so this is the route you should go. So having impact measurement for your current assessment of what's going on. Mm-hmm. You should start to make scenarios related to a transition. So say, we expect, or call it a vision or whatever, say, okay, this is what we expect that should happen. And then you should track it and say, okay, these are the indicators we use right now. Mm-hmm. And then say, okay, this is where we expect it that the world should go to. And then evaluate every year based on those indicators, but maybe also based on other data. Do we make the right decisions? Is this going in the right direction?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. And maybe it's also really about what do you measure? Yeah, if you talk about transitions, maybe you should not really directly look at what are we doing, but look at what's this transition? Can we try to measure it? And that's probably not something you should do alone, right? You're not the only party in a transition.
But it can also lead to different investments and financing decisions. So what we did over the years, I said already with the first wind turbine in 1986. If you look at what's happening in the energy transition and the role of Triodos Bank, we should say, okay, this is mainstream. Wind, solar is also mainstream. Maybe the hotspot for us. So seeing the transition, but also your role as a commercial organization in transition is also to move on. And that's why we now end up with doing more batteries for more storage.
Yeah.
And but that's maybe a good example that you asked, Emma, like how can you use it for steering? Mm-hmm. I think that's a good one where you can look at what is the added value of what we do there. Yeah. And there you actually saw that the added values, you're comparing it to the average energy grid of, for example, solar and wind energy is going down. And the one for battery is actually going up. So I think that it really can help to make choices in where we should allocate our money.
All right. So that's all very good. But I think the key thing is those choices still need to be made. And that is a topic for a whole nother episode. But we can definitely get the insights there. So just summarizing, the banks obviously have a lot of influence on these sustainability transitions. And measuring impacts can help as a guide, but it shouldn't replace those value-driven decisions. Great. Thanks for both of your insights. I think now we'll listen to Hans bring some hopeful news, hopefully.
Hopefully. Yeah.
Emma
always wants hopeful news because I think she's optimistic herself. This is the last episode of 2024. So
already?
I thought it would be good to look at 2025. And like I always do in the end of the year, going through a lot of economic and investment outlooks, looking at what the yields bring. And it's relatively dreadful, I have to say. Okay. So, especially on sustainability issues. 2024 was not a good year. So what I tried to do, it took me some energy, is can we see some glimmers of hope for 2025? And I ended up at two things. Both by the United Nations, and both say it will be the year off, and maybe this is a good sign. So the first year that the United Nations has designated 2025 to be is the International Year of the Cooperatives. So cooperatives are all kinds of forms. So it can be a business where people are shared ownership in some kind of a structure. and emphasizing the role of cooperatives in promoting sustainable development and social equity. That's the year.
And why are they calling 2025 as the year of cooperative?
Because they see that it is necessary to have more cooperation.
Oh, okay. All right.
So not only in the Western world, but all across the world. So bringing people together to do stuff themselves. And I think what's lying behind it, governments are not going to do it. Someone else has to do it. So that's the first one. The second one, we're getting a little bit more technical, is quantum computing. So the United Nations has designated 2025 as International Year of Quantum Computing.
And this is different than ChatGPT AI?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. This can be really about complex calculations for medicines, for solving very difficult, yeah, I don't
understand. For impact metrics, maybe?
Maybe for the best impact metric, yeah, maybe forward-looking impact indicators as quantum computing. Yeah, that would be nice. Technology, and from a sustainability perspective, it's always difficult because we see a lot of positive things on the technological frontier, also on climate and everything. We see a lot of promising stuff. Mm-hmm. But in the end, take AI, what it does is consumes even more energy, even more water, and is not used always as a force for good. So let's hope 2025, also from quantum computing, will be a year that technology in general will be a force for good that helps to solve the problems we have instead of being another problem.
And financial institutions can hopefully contribute to that positive development?
If they have the nice impact management in place, of course. Okay. If they that's an important point. I hope also that in 2025, a lot of people in the financial industry understand and realize that they have the power to make the right decisions. They can choose, right?
Yeah.
So it is ethical. So it's not about risk return. It's about in what you choose. So let's also hope 2025 will be a year on that. And in the end, because it's almost Christmas, it is about collaboration. It's about collaboration between people, so maybe also in the financial sector, in those cooperatives, because we should not look at those governments. We should do it ourselves together to create this world to be a better place. Yeah, this is Christmas.
I feel like singing a Christmas carol now. Yeah. All right. Thanks for summing it up so beautifully. Thank you, Sven, for your insights. And for both of you for giving a deeper dive into the topic of impact measurements, but also an outlook for next year. Thank you, listeners, for listening to this week's episode of the Money for Change podcast. We will include a link in the show notes if you are keen to learn more on the approach of Triodos to its impact management. We won't be here for the next coming 2 weeks. We'll be on Christmas holidays, but then after in the new year, we will start with a big bang. Thank you for listening and stay tuned.
That's a wrap for this episode of Money for Change. We hope you found today's conversation insightful and inspiring as we continue to explore the transitions that are shaping our world and our future. If you enjoyed what you heard, don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you never miss an episode. Thanks for tuning in to Money for Change.